Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. Well, friends, this is the last weekend, last show for 2018, the year in review, and to join me in studio are two fellow IFJA members, and we're going to talk about our best and worst of the year and everything else that we've been doing, because this is tough times for critics. The struggle is real with all the free movies that are sent to us, and then we have to give them awards, and we have to break it down. So, you know, the struggle is real while you are out going to the multiplexes and paying top dollar, which we appreciate. So, anyway, joining me in studio is co-founder of the Film Yap. He's currently dressed like Vic Morrow in the Bad News Bears with Florida Marlins gear. That's Joe Shearer.
That's Fisher's Falcons gear. Thank you very much.
Is it really? Okay, yeah, I know, Fisher. And also, well, a gentleman who started a campaign in January and stuck with it, and it worked out for him, from the Midwest Film Journal, Evan Dawsey.
Yes, Paddington 2 for life.
He even converted me.
So. Yes.
Okay, so actually this is, and yes, Paddington 2,
yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, award-winning film, Paddington 2.
That's right.
Thanks to the IFJA, which we'll get at in a little bit, but we're going to go through our top films of the year, and Paddington 2 is a great example because that thing came out, what, third week of January?
I think it came out, it was the sixth movie
second
I
week?
Watched.
Okay, so
it was the first week, first screener we had.
Okay, and that was one where, and we've done this with, I think, with when we think a film has a big impact, and you think, well, is this, you know, every film you go to from then on out, is this better than Paddington 2? And you got to ask that for 12 months almost, it was the answer was no.
I watched 185 releases this year. 25% of the movies I watched all year, not a single movie I watched this year was fit that description as better than Paddington 2. Mm-hmm.
So, and I of course I wanted. Yeah. I also wanted noted you came on this show and stated your case.
Yeah.
At the very, very beginning.
Yeah, I'll say there isn't that much more I have to state that hasn't been already stated in this show. I got my filibuster.
Yeah, and it was, but it was funny because at the IFJA meeting, a fellow critic of ours, a dear friend as well, he finally asked, okay, what's the hype? And I mean, I did that in January because the first couple weeks, honestly, I thought it was a bit.
Yeah.
And then you came in and you filibustered. You gave a very eloquent answer and you had your theories and reasons behind it. And it was our, and
yeah,
it worked.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a solid, solid film.
Yeah, and I'm happy. It's on several other best of year lists for other critics, for other publications. It's
mm-hmm.
in IndieWire, and I think Slash, some of the critics on Slash Film have it on their list. And
BAFTA, of course.
BAFTA gave Hugh Grant the best supporting actor, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But now it came out in 2017 in the UK, so I think it was on their awards last year. Yeah,
and I will say, as someone who talks to Evan virtually every day, I had to listen to it for about 10 and a half months
before you finally succumbed.
Before I finally saw it, because I missed it in the theater, and he just bugged me. He bugged me so much that...
I saw you change your words. Thank you.
Right. He bugged me so much that I was just like, I'm not watching that movie. And then, you know, once I saw that he was pretty serious about how he was going to vote for it, I was like, all right, I guess I got to see it. I even tried to bother my kids to come watch it with me.
Oh, are they at that stage now?
Yeah, and they're like, oh, we don't want to watch that. And I did. I texted him during the first 15 minutes of the movie, and I was like, this movie is delightful. And I said, why did you not tell me about this movie before?
You did, didn't you?
Yeah, well, and then I'm yelling at my kids to no avail, but
okay, first off, I get the kids thing. They're not your kids, they're my kids. Right. Stop texting during the movie. You're part of the problem.
I was at home.
Okay. I guess it's a movie theater, not your living room. Oh, wait, it is your living room. So, okay. Yeah, Emma and I saw it in the theater.
Yeah.
And because we had liked the fact that that film, the first one being released in January with no fanfare, and I know Chris Lloyd was another one that championed that. Like, what were you thinking? And it gained a nice little following. It wasn't huge, but it was an enjoyable picture, and I've always had a soft spot for Paddington. This is how old I am, as Evan knows. I post pictures of Paddington with the black hat.
Yeah.
Before he upgraded to the red hat, mm-hmm. And the fact that they dumped it again in January with very little fanfare, but of course it got a little different momentum this time around.
Yeah, and it's funny, not just Paddington, but a lot of this year's best movies came out in the first half of the year.
Exactly, and I'm saying looking at my list, because I had the same thing with my top film, although it didn't come that early. But yeah, is it better than this film? And most of the time,
what did
it was
you have yours as your top?
My top was First Reformed.
Yeah,
talk about if you have a bear in a downward spiral. Mine is, well. Paul Schrader's your go-to guy if you're going down a downward spiral.
Oh, yeah.
And this time it's Ethan Hawke as a preacher who's got ethical and business and moral dilemmas, and I loved it.
That
I
really was amazing.
So I guess let's go. We started with you, Evan. Yeah. Go through your top list.
Sure. So, you know, Paddington 2, and then...
the rest of the field.
immediately after that is the new Suspiria. Which
really?
I think it's a bit of a 1-2 punch there, since one is about a sweet bear and the other one is about, you know,
witchcraft
witches.
And dance.
Yeah, I loved that movie. We saw it.
No,
twice.
I have to. Have you seen the original? Have you seen
it? Several times. Yeah,
there was a post I wrote a while back that the 1977 original Suspiria is My Favorite Things by Julie Andrews, and that the remake is My Favorite Things by John Coltrane. It is the same story told in two completely different ways.
Oh, yeah. And I loved that analogy. Like, that said it better than my entire, like, review
did. And like, the remake covers a lot of territory. I mean, besides the dancing and the witches and little Nazi Germany and Tilda Swinton, I mean, as often said on Film Sociology, there's a lot of story going on.
Yeah, it's a lot of movie. And it has that awesome score, which won the
Tom
IGN
York,
Award.
Yes.
Yeah,
so.
It was a good year for Radiohead.
And that was a divided picture. I don't know anybody who thought Suspiria was okay.
Yeah, no, it was either.
No, yeah, no.
You not a fan of it, Joe?
No, I really like
it.
Yeah, I'm in the pro category for sure.
You also feel, you know what, especially in our group, you feel like the younger ones when you like Suspiria.
Yeah.
And I'm old. I know people in that group that did not. All right, continue.
Sorry to Bother You is my number three, which is Boots Riley's.
Yep.
Social picture. Roma is my number four, which was...
Chris Lloyd's very happy. Hi,
never,
Chris.
You Were Never Really Here is my five. That movie, another one that came out super early in the year and took a bunch of our awards and is still, you know, taking awards other places.
Yep.
The Rider is number six, which I watched that movie by myself. So Allie had gone to bed. My wife, Allie, who co-runs the site with us, and she doesn't watch all the screeners I watch, especially if they're like link screeners, like The Rider was when we got on a link. I came over and I told her the movie felt like my entire body was crying. Like, I found that movie such an emotionally intense experience.
Mm-hmm.
First Reformed is my eight. Annihilation, or sorry, First Reformed is my seven. Annihilation, which came out in February, is my eight. I've watched that multiple times.
Okay.
Awesome.
It's one of those. Yeah. It's not. I think I respected it more than I liked it, and I know there's a little postpartum.
Yeah.
There's a little pregnancy, maybe. Over multiple watchings, did you discover new things? Spoiler alert on a film that's out on video and it's been out since February. So shut up.
Yeah. I liked the movie the first time I saw it. Then I listened to the soundtrack again for the entire year.
Okay.
Started to think about it more, watched it again. Now, Allie, I mean, in the ensuing time, my wife became pregnant.
Oh, and, perfect.
And she had already explained to me through her review, which is on our website, the elements of just a science fiction movie about women and women's depression and women trying to figure themselves out in the midst of self-destruction, like a pretentious way to say it. But then we were watching it, and our son is kicking. And the same scene that you see these characters cut open someone, and the person's been becoming metamorphosed into like this giant worm plant creature.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, damn, I kind of get it now.
Okay.
And she pointed at her belly, and she's like, yeah, see, this is what the movie's about. So I was like, okay, that makes more
sense.
All right,
good. I don't feel off. Good.
Yeah, so. But it did take me like 2 or 3 watches to really jive with it.
And I know the mall crowd is irritated because the previews kind of look like Female Predator.
Yeah.
And it's so not that.
Nothing like
not
it.
Not even close.
Nothing like it. Number 9 is A Star is Born.
Yeah.
Which.
All you had to do was be better than Babs' version.
Right, and, right.
And they did.
Yeah.
They really did.
Oh, yeah. And 10 is Black Panther.
Okay.
Which stuck with me. More the experience of seeing it almost than the movie itself, which is great. But, like, the experience of seeing Black Panther. And
yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
That was a fun group. Joe, your top 10.
My one is off the wall maybe a little bit, but not for me, if you know me.
We know you, Joe.
And, so I've got Avengers Infinity War.
Really?
Yeah, which, again, is to me was a perfect movie. It's the, you know, and we've talked about it on this show many times, the movie I've wanted to see since I was 5 was Avengers Infinity War. And I loved everything about it. I don't care about any of the, you know, whatever.
Oh, I'll say it. Blah, you don't blah, care blah. About the crusty old men thing. They're going to bring those characters back.
No, because because
that was my problem with the very, very end. I'm like,
right. And of course, I know what's going to happen, you know, to at least to some degree, if not specifically what's going to happen.
Okay.
Just based off of my knowledge of the past. But.
Oh, wait, we don't want to talk about
that. Right. Right. But, you know, but my kids. And many, many adults and kids alike who aren't as familiar with the source material, you know, were stunned. And it worked for me. And I think they sold it, you know, that well. Of course, I know, like I said, I know what's going on.
Okay.
I'm waiting for that to happen. But for now, it doesn't matter, right? Because I was just like, that was awesome the way they did
you
it.
You sound like Chris when he saw Blade Runner 2049 last year. Right. No, I mean, it's kind of... That's,
yeah, no, yeah. Yeah, that's... That
Something. You were anticipating something, and it delivered.
And it absolutely gave me exactly what I wanted, and I was perfectly happy with that. And again, it did for me, you know, it came out, what was that? What did it come out? Did it hit May? I think it was
early
late
summer.
April. It was
late April.
Like April 26th.
Because the summer blockbuster season starts in April
and,
now.
Yeah.
And I kept... And the film critic in me... Through as the year wore on, I thought it can't end as my number one movie. I'm going to see something
you,
better.
You know, you look. Oh, okay, here's a little more critic insight. When it gets to be the end of summer and you do your kind of half year in review, and you're like, oh, these are going to make the honorable mentions. You know,
right.
Because if you look at your honorable mentions and you go, damn, that's a solid 10 or a 5.
Yeah,
that's a good sign. So. Yeah. But yeah, the fact that
but I kept wanting to knock it off. But then every time I saw a movie, I was like, "Well, is it?" You know, and I thought, "Boy, that's pretty high." And I thought, "Is it better than Avengers?" And then I was like, "No, it just
so
isn't.
The movie just pixelated away,
right?" So yeah, it just kind of drifts.
This
off
movie doesn't feel good.
Yeah. So and I think they juggled all of the characters perfectly. They allowed characters to be imperfect. They had people who, you know, were, you know, whose personalities were a certain way. As a strength in one of their movies is now a hindrance to them, and I'm speaking of Star-Lord in this case, and you know, and all of them, you know, and they all interacted in ways, sometimes in ways that I expected, sometimes in ways that just blew me away. I was like, wow, that I never even thought that, you know, Doctor Strange and Iron Man would hate each other, you know, and then I, you know, but. As I went along,
you're
I was
giddy.
Like, that's awesome. So that's what it was. I just went, that's awesome for 2.5 hours. And
we know we were in the same aisle as you.
Right? No. So my number 2, Sorry to Bother You, which I love that movie. And I was just, I was sitting there watching it and I had no expectations. I didn't know what it was about when I started watching it even. And as it wore on, I was like, this movie is amazing. You know, the
keeps going.
Yeah. of course, race is at the center of the movie, and the way they go off on it is so perfect, and it's of course in some ways it's hysterically funny, and in some ways it's maddening, and it makes you angry, but the story it tells is terrific,
and it's okay to do both at the same time.
It is okay to do both at the same time.
Yeah.
I think it's
everything else is the rest of the field.
Everything else is not so much. I was going to say my next three movies are my next two movies are also films that deal heavily with race, and I think it was a really strong year for that. My number three is The Hate U Give, which I explained to someone, or I described to someone, as Boys in the Hood, except kind of accessible to my children.
Yeah.
Which it's not in some ways, but it's a modern version, I think.
We are of a certain age. I remember seeing Boys in the Hood and Menace to Society. And I mean, by the early 90s, there was sort of a glut of inner city drama, dramatic films that were out there. Mm-hmm. And on paper, The Hate U Give sort of has that feel, but there's also the story of identity with the lead who is going to a private school. So her private school persona compared to her home persona and what happens when the two worlds clash. So you have all of that on top of, the subplot of is she going to snitch or not?
Right.
And then an ending, I thought, there's the ending that I thought, you could end the film here. But I was okay with the way they ended it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because on paper, not giving away too much, because it's still fairly fresh out. Is it out in theater still, or is it on video yet?
It's probably closer to video.
It should be closer.
But
there's a
technique of voiceover and montage that feels like it's wrapping itself up in a bow, but it works in this case.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
So
to me, it did such a great job of taking which was a hot button issue in the news. And again, this is why I compare it to Boys in the Hood. Is it at the time that it came out, the issue that it takes on, it humanizes and puts a face to exactly what's going on, and describes it in a way that no news broadcast, no talking head, is going to be able to properly, adequately describe, and it changes. It's a thing that can change the outlook of someone from seeing it in this angle. And not seeing it from that detached, this doesn't affect me angle. You see these characters, who are they're not thugs, and they're not, they're just
right.
People.
There's gray. There's gray area amongst them.
And they're just people, and here's bad stuff happening to them. Look at it like this. My number four then, Black Klansman. Which is the best thing Spike Lee has done, I think, in many years. It's of course it's got the same biting edge, but it is so funny, and I really love Topher Grace's David Duke. I thought he was so great, and Adam Driver was amazing, and I think it's John David Washington is the lead, and I've never seen him in anything that I recall, and he was so great.
The other one I know, and I finally got because it was sent to us, was of Monsters and Men, where he's and there's a great scene early on where he is. It's the opening scene in the film where he's singing along to an Al Green tune, and he gets pulled over.
Yeah.
And he gets pulled over, and then he whips out his badge, and there's that kind of, I wasn't doing anything, and you go on your way. So anyway, AKA Denzel's kid, good for him. Yeah, good year for him. It's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. And if you haven't seen Black Klansman, I'll say go see it.
By the way, I think this is the first year Son did better than his dad cinematically.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed Equalizer, too.
Not that much.
Not like that.
No.
Next for me is Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Thank you.
I
didn't produce it. It's about PBS.
Yeah, right.
it's more about, it's about you and me and the fact that we're human beings.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and it again they call it a movie for the times. It's a movie we need today, and it for someone my age most definitely. I grew up with Mr. Rogers, and it was funny that about 4 or 5 months ago, I can't remember if it was right before or right after I saw the movie, but I found an old post from Facebook that popped up. Remember when this happened. And it was
thanks Zuckerberg.
Yeah, really. It was me posting about how I had just turned on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood for my kids, and I expected them to watch it. They must have been just two or three, four years old at the time, and I expected them to look at it for 5 minutes and get up and walk away. And they actually sat there and were enwrapped with just this guy, as I was obviously at that age, watching a man just, do what by today's standards are very innocuous kind of things,
Low key, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The colors are much more muted than what kids are used to today. And the fact that they were so, enthralled was great. So, and that's what this movie did for me, is remind me of all that. And, I was reduced to tears at least a half a dozen times watching it. So,
we're pro crying here at the IJ.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And film sociology.
Yeah, I got no shame for that.
No.
My next one, number six, is Eighth Grade.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was such a good movie. Just
thank God you're not in middle school anymore.
After I watched it, I thought to myself, I've got to watch this movie with my kids. And then I turned it on for my daughter to watch.
And what grade is she in?
She is in fifth grade.
Okay.
Or sixth grade.
Get ready, kid.
Yeah, she's in sixth grade now. And we got about 3 minutes into the movie, and my wife walked by and was like, whoa, what are we watching? And I was like, yeah, we need to turn this off.
All right. You had good intentions.
Yeah.
We all know the story when I tried to show too young Emma Food, Inc., and that did not – she fared about as long as y'all did that one. So.
Right, right. My older son is in eighth grade, and I'm going to let him watch it probably pretty soon. And it's –
Hey, seen in a car, don't do that.
Right.
Don't be that guy.
Exactly, yes. Right, yeah. And the father character, of course, is the guy I identify with.
I remember seeing it in the theater with Emma, and there were two moms to my right. Mm-hmm. And there was a moment where I think they were like, it was one of the moms, but they were like, poor woman. And I almost wanted to say, shut up, poor dad.
Right.
He's got problems. And then Emma did say to me, Dad, all the years that we've lived here, thank you for never opening my door shirtless. And there's a really, but it's a dad scene. There's just when dad's checking in on kid, and they're like, dude, put a shirt on.
Right.
Your kid doesn't want to see that.
He definitely gets a moment of redemption.
It is a wonderful screen dad. It is. Yeah. I know I bash on the suburban fairy tales of one John Hughes, but that's a pure cinematic dad right there.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Number seven for me is Paddington 2. So again, Evan converted me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, he was filibustering like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
He was.
Like Henry Fonda in 12 Angry Men.
I had a whip count going into the meeting.
Yeah, he did. He had it all. I know he had it all down.
Yeah.
And he was talking about the math of it all. He's like, okay, well, if we get this guy, just we need one more person to vote for it.
He's fun on draft day, too.
Right. I'll just skip over that and, leave what's been said about that to be said. Number eight for me is Private Life, a Netflix film.
Oh, I just watched that.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that. Paul Giamatti and Catherine Hahn are a couple trying to conceive, and they are, they're a little later in that, in that particular space, and are trying to have a child, and it goes off in really fun and wonderful and kind of interesting, dangerous directions.
Yeah, there's been films about getting pregnant, and 9 months comes to mind, where it's about as blunt as a rubber crutch, and about as funny.
Right.
And so that's a very naturalistic look.
And Paul Giamatti was so just forlorn.
Yep.
And Catherine Hahn was the two of them together.
Really,
maybe
nice
my favorite couple of the year,
and that's Tamara Jenkins, who gave us The Savages, which is another great film about siblings dealing with the father in the home in a retirement home.
Yep. And I'll gloss over number nine. You Were Never Really Here Again. Evan talked about that.
Yep.
Love that movie. Such a good movie. I want to watch it again. As a matter of fact, I was just thinking the other day, I really want to watch it again.
Very good.
And then number 10 again, playing on my mainstream tastes and sensibilities, Creed 2. So
as you were talking earlier about change, so can we change?
Right.
If they can change.
Everybody can.
Does the audience turn as fast in Creed 2 as they did in Rocky 4? Do they make fun of that at least? Do they acknowledge it? No,
they don't go.
They bring everybody else back, but they don't talk about that fast turn.
Yeah,
there
yeah.
are wrestling crowds that don't turn that fast.
Right, yeah. Really. Oh, I you know what?
It's not brought up.
No, they don't even mention it. But you know, and Evan and I talked about and our friends, you know, Nick Rogers, of course, and Sam Watermeyer and others.
Hey guys,
that there was more Dolph Lundgren's Ivan Drago got more character development.
I was hoping
five minutes of that movie than he did all through Rocky IV.
Yes, because he's a giant slab.
Much hard for Creed II. That movie was way better than it had any right to be.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
Also in the ad campaign,
I keep waiting for. And I said that from the first one too. I was like, this movie should have been a miserable failure 9 times out of 10.
Yeah,
again, these movies
not
are
in the
ridiculously
ad campaign.
Bad. Yeah, but they were both just inexplicably terrific. And this took that story that, you know, that we had, you know, really, you know, since the first one came out, we thought this is the natural progression. We've got to see him fight Drago's son or
sure
Drago
enough.
Has to become involved in some way.
Yep.
And it was pretty close to perfect.
Wow.
It's a perfect goodbye to Rocky, yeah. too, if he's really done playing that character, which
yeah.
who believes that?
Right.
I'm afraid not. He's still, he's gotten a really good resurgence with.
Oh, yeah.
Revamping a couple franchises and getting a nomination for it. No, he's gonna Willie Mays with the Mets his way.
Oh yeah,
he's gonna Michael Jordan with the Wizards his way through his career.
Well, they just finished filming Rambo Last Blood.
That's great. That's terrific.
He
directed by McGee.
Oh man,
I don't know.
He really didn't get as much to do in this movie. You know, it was almost like they shoehorned him in, and they're like, "Well, he's got to do something, so he's got to be
staring across the ring."
Yeah. It, initially, he's going to be against him fighting. That's it.
I have to say, the sequence where he and Dolph Lundgren get to be eye to eye was just amazing.
Yeah, and there's like, two moments.
Some folks have been waiting for that for 35 years.
Oh, yeah.
So.
When I saw the moment in the trailer, I absolutely just goosebumps. I was like, "Wow, that's you know, it's like that's amazing," because you don't know, the way Rocky IV ends, you think. Would they be buddies? Would they be like, would they hug each other?
No, they're going to fight privately and not tell anybody
right,
how it ends.
That's exactly
oh, wait, they've done that. Well, Mr. T's still alive, so he needs a check.
Creed made a lot of money.
That's the next rumor is that they want.
Or they'll get another
son of Clubber Lang. Yeah, which I don't know. That's probably going to the well once too often.
Could end up here 2 years from now saying it's better than it had any right to be.
that's true. Most likely.
All right, so that's your 10. My 10, yeah, as I mentioned, First Reformed. I love Paul Schrader, and it's a fine performance by Ethan Hawke and covers a lot of territory about faith and business and ethics and politics and even the two weird areas of the film, the floating sequence and the very, very end, which is like about as romantic an ending as a Paul Schrader film really can be ever. I was still with it. Number two, You Were Never Really Here. By the way, strong year for female directors.
Oh, yeah.
As we were talking about Tamara Jenkins and Lynn Ramsey, and I know I'm missing a few, but You Were Never Really Here is my number two. It's Drive with Dad Issues. and good use, best use of hammer since Old Boy.
Oh, yeah.
Number three, Leave No Trace.
Yeah.
Probably my favorite father-daughter duo, and it's from the director of Winter's Bone.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, Eighth Grade. Yeah. And because of that, I was able to make my daughter watch Todd Solondz's Welcome to the Dollhouse, which she said, that's warped. Dad, that's messed up. And I said, yes, and thank God you're not in middle school anymore.
Uh-huh.
Number five is The Favorite.
Yeah.
I think a film that will be in the pantheon of acid tongue costume dramas,
for sure.
Like Dangerous Liaisons, like Lion in Winter. Yeah. Won't You Be My Neighbor, also on that list, of course. I was with the family. My wife was too old for Mr. Rogers. Emma just didn't latch on to it when she was at the right age, and all of us were.
Yeah.
It sounded like the Cowboys locker room in the 90s, or the Royals. Anyway, The Hate U Give, of course, we've mentioned that. What made my Three Identical Strangers, three boys that find out they were not only, but they were triplets and separated. So you have what is kind of a novelty part of the first third, and then what happened to them in the second third, and then how they ended up. I mean, it's a really nice arc story of these three guys and what they went through. Number nine, Leave No Trace. I'm sorry, not Leave No Trace. Never Look Away. Sorry, that's similar. That's from the director of The Lives of Others, about the about an artist escaping Nazi Germany and working in the West, and also the mashup, like First Reformed, the tangled web between art and politics, especially in a place like East and West Germany.
Yeah,
really, really enjoyed that. And then number 10 was The Rider, which yes, it is like The Wrestler, in which that's all this guy can do. And and you know, the scene of him in a grocery store, and there's that kind of rather die on your feet than live stacking boxes of things.
Right.
And the fact that it was, that's a good use of, there were two examples of films where you had real people, and the director used real people, real locals, looks great, and were way more naturalistic than, say, the 1517 The Paris.
Yeah.
So, well, at least it wasn't footage of them traveling.
Yeah.
Way too much footage of them traveling. So, all right, so those are our top. So, yeah, there's really, really good stuff out there.
Oh, yeah.
I guess let's make short. What were some of the worst things you've seen this year, Evan?
I walked out of three movies for the first time.
Wow!
Because I had MoviePass, so I didn't pay for them. So I was like, I'm done with this.
Basketball.
Yeah.
All right.
Red Sparrow, which was Jennifer Lawrence's
Russian assassin movie.
I think that probably tanked her aspirations for her own superhero franchise kind of thing. Honestly, like, she's gonna probably end up in a bunch of costume dramas now.
Wait, that was being pushed as a...
It was advertised as one, but...
Really?
I actually walked out 10 minutes before it ended because I was just tired of it. Mm-hmm. I just went home.
Wow.
Like, that one, I walked out of A Private War, which was the biopic on the war reporter, as played by, I think it was Rosamund Pike.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I walked out of that one. Wasn't a big fan of it. Wouldn't make my bottom 10, though. I mean, Red Sparrow was my least favorite movie of the year, but A Private War is just one that I didn't see enough. And I walked out of A Miseducation of Cameron Post, which was fine, but it just didn't do anything for me.
That's Chloe Grace Moretz.
Yeah.
Chloe Grace Moretz.
It was the
D-Gang, the female D-Gang film.
Yeah.
To go with Boy Erased.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't watch those together.
But
Don't do that.
Joe got to experience Gaudi with me this summer, the John Travolta biopic.
Yeah, that's Ooh. My top. And we were talking earlier, I was like, was that a Netflix film or did it just feel like a Netflix film? As I said on No Limits, it felt like it should have been a parody mafia movie.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
Oh, yeah.
It was really not, I mean, there's a subgenre of people that just love films about organized crime. That's why we still do them to this day.
Yeah.
And I don't think, just because you were an entourage doesn't mean you should make your own mob movie.
I mean, it is a movie that literally starts with John Travolta standing there saying, "Oi, New York, the greatest city in the world."
Right.
And about just like that, too.
That's about
what's going on.
It
was not his worst movie this year, though, which was Speed Kills, which was basically Gaudi with speedboats. That was VOD about a month ago. Watched it on Thanksgiving morning, actually.
Why? Wow. You're like me. You have a little bit. You're like, why in God's name your wife? By the way, he just finished Paint Your Wagon, which we'll get to in a little bit.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
We'll get to that.
That's tough.
My God. Okay, Joe. Yeah.
Well, I've got Gaudi occupying the bottom spot. My pet movie to hate on this year, though, is Peter Rabbit.
I've not seen it, but what I've read, and you can verify, he brags about killing somebody,
yes,
right?
Yes, he ostensibly commits murder in the first few minutes of the movie and then spends the rest of the movie bragging about how he committed murder. And then at the end, he finds out he didn't actually commit murder, and he's pretty upset about that. And he has to kind of be talked back into, hey, it's okay that you didn't really murder this guy.
And how much pop music is used in it?
Yeah, way too much.
And see, all of this, and I still don't want to look at it look at Rose Byrne.
Right,
so,
right.
No.
And it turns in, I mean, it's at its best, it's... the worst of the Alvin and the Chipmunks movies, and then at its worst, it's a cartoon character killing someone and bragging about it. Yeah, the other one, again, Evan, I know was not a big fan of Ben Is Back, which is the most insulting thing you can, the most insulting My Son Is on Drugs drama that I think you can.
Now, did you see Beautiful Boy before it?
I saw it before it. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Beautiful Boy is not a great movie, but is much better than
There's a term, and I always credit Johnson Knopf for saying this because he used it with Gran Torino, and we had a lot of them this year, the R-rated after-school specials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Beautiful Boy and Ben is Back and Boy Erased. Mm-hmm. And I think I posted earlier, I want Lucas Hedges and Timothy Chalamet to star in a remake of Superbad. They need to do comedies fast.
Yeah.
I like both of them.
Yeah.
They've put in really good performances in the past and have been praised for it, and rightly so. I hope they don't become the go-to for just complete cinematic depression.
Yeah.
And, Julia Roberts is chasing after her drug-addicted son.
Well, no, she's there. In a sense. She's chasing after her drug-addicted son, who is chasing after the family dog, who has been stolen.
So it's like John Wick mixed with Beautiful Boy, only no gunfire.
With no gunfire. Well, very few guns.
Yeah, I find the reaction to Ben is Back interesting, because I didn't care for it, and it felt to me like it was almost an exploitation film.
Yeah.
Like, about young kids.
Addiction exploitation.
Yeah. Whereas Beautiful Boy was the more, like, straightforward, like, drama. Yeah.
Terrible. Okay, I know Lou Harry's not here to back me up on this, but when we heard Sunrise, Sunset, and Beautiful Boy, we were screaming at it. And this is also the film that used Old Man by Neil Young, and you had a scene where father and son, it's not really giving anything away, father and son open a door into the light, but then are sitting in the shade.
Yeah.
And Steve Carell, Steve Carell's a Rolling Stone writer as much as I am a Rolling Stone writer.
Right.
But it also reminded me of when Carell hosted SNL and they do the monologue. He's doing his monologue, and the whole bit is just people from the office in the audience going, "Dude, you should really do the reboot so we all get huge paychecks."
Yeah. And stop making all these serious movies.
Jennifer Fisher said, "You can stop making all those sad movies."
Bob Bloom was referring to Beautiful Boy and Welcome to Marwin as this year's sad Steve Carell movies because it's become a thing.
And did you see Marwin?
Year. Yeah.
I did not.
The movie's weird. Yeah. And it's not bad. It's not bad.
Okay.
It's just the most inexplicable thing I've watched in theaters all year.
Wow.
I think Nick Rogers did as good of a job as someone can do, like synthesizing Zemeckis' recent work to figure out how he came to this place. But boy, it's a weird movie.
Do they have the dead eyes as much as the dead eyes in Polar Express?
No, they don't.
Okay.
Thankfully. That would have been even weirder.
Right.
But, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah,
we are. You are. We still. What else are we
talking about again?
I didn't like. Did you see? So I watched all six Nicolas Cage movies this year.
Why?
You gotta see what's going on.
You want to see which ones he's doing to pay off his debt, and which one he's doing for the fun of it. So is Mandy that bat spit crazy?
No, it's not. But it's good.
Okay.
It's cool.
All right.
Has a good soundtrack. Has cool music. But he was also in a movie called Between Worlds. And it came out like a week ago, where he plays this down on his luck trucker who falls in love with a woman whose daughter is possessed by his dead ex-wife's spirit.
Oh, I heard of this.
And the daughter is trying to seduce him.
This is a VHS movie in the 80s.
It is a Skinamax movie made just for Nicolas Cage. It's crazy.
But he's aware.
Oh, yeah. There's a scene where he and the daughter are consummating their affair.
Oh, God.
And he is reading from a book called Memories by Nicolas Cage.
Stop.
Written by Nicolas Cage, which is all about Eskimos for some reason.
Did he pay off his debt? Now he's just doing anything that's thrown at him?
He must have. I mean, he was in Spider-Verse as Spider-Man. Uh-huh. He was in Teen Titans as Superman.
Well, those will pay well.
Yeah.
So. Okay. File under, I can't believe, because occasionally, as critics said, that especially the last 2 months of the year, my curiosity gets the worst of me because something will come out on video and I'm like, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
How bad can it be? You know what I saw in the theaters? And it was like a Thursday, and it was and I don't know what else I was seeing or what. I saw Death Wish.
Oh,
I sat and watched Eli Roth's remake of Death Wish, which makes the first Death Wish seem like Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment by comparison. Hello, literature fans.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this was, there was a great article about the history of the Death Wish series, which one is not bad. I'm going to defend one.
Sure.
It is, and two is ridiculous. Two is awful.
Yeah.
It helps if you have a few cocktails. Three is ridiculous.
Three is the one with the rocket launcher, right?
Yeah. And the giggler, and it was shot in England.
Yeah.
And not, but, anyway, I was doing research on the Death Wish series itself, and it made me angrier because at one time in, I think, the early 70s, because it's based on the novel, I believe, sure, it's Death Sentence, which was also remade with made with Kevin Bacon, and it's better than this.
Right.
But at one point, attached to the Death Wish film in the 70s, was director Sidney Lumet,
wow,
and Jack Lemmon.
Wow.
That I wish I could have seen.
Yeah.
And then I think what happened was Dino De Laurentiis got his hooks on it, and they both bailed.
Such was the
70s. So you had Michael Winner and Charles Bronson. And it's a decent Bronson performance. I mean, of course, when I think when I think of Architects, I think of Charlie Bronson.
Right.
But it has more layers and depth compared to Eli Roth's. It's hard to have a moral dilemma when you're blasting AC/DC's Back in Black in the film. It's really, I mean, and it's every other revenge film that's been put out in the last whatever years. But you couldn't get Bryan Cranston. You couldn't get Paul Giamatti. You got to stop casting action heroes in stuff like Death Wish. I would have even preferred Jennifer Garner jumping ship from Peppermint and starring in Death Wish. That would have been more interesting.
Yeah.
And I saw Peppermint, and that's also, as much as we like to look at Jennifer Garner with guns, not fun at all.
Yeah, Peppermint was no good.
So, yeah, it just a not fun experience, and then the history just made me angrier.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so there's that. We're done with the R-rated after-school specials. What else don't we want in 2019? And there's and you guys saw more worse stuff than I did.
Oh, for sure.
Because with this show now ready to go into year 10, and also partly because of work and commitments, but there was like, I'm not reviewing that.
I just can't help myself sometimes.
Right.
No, I get it. Yeah. I get it. You know, that's why he goes, I'm like, okay, I'm going to try this. So, all right. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Evan Dossey and Joe Shearer are hanging out, talking about the year in review. Why are you watching Paint Your Wagon? Did you do a Clint Eastwood Western anthology?
No. So I work an office job, and around the Christmas time, there's less to do. So I got curious on Amazon Prime. I was like, well, I'm going to watch a movie while I do some paperwork.
Good.
And I searched Westerns. Then I watched Hang 'Em High, and I was like, dang, I've never seen Paint Your Wagon since it came up with the – it said you may like next because of Clint Eastwood.
Because of Clint Eastwood.
And I was like, okay, well, this sounds fine. And, man, that movie is interminable. Like, I cannot believe it's
okay,
still going.
Okay, first up, did you like Hang 'Em High?
I loved Hang 'Em High.
Okay.
I mean, that was great. It was not as good as some of his other ones, but
– well, that was his first American Western.
It was.
I remember. Yeah, so, I mean, that's hard. It's hard to go from The Good, the Bad, the Ugly to Hang 'Em High.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was, and I know Lou Harry has talked about this, but there, you know, in the early 70s, late 60s, the studios thought, okay, we could either have musicals with movie stars who can sort of sing, or we could cast lesser known people who can sing and take a crapshoot. A great example was they had, except for one actress, the entire cast of 1776 on Broadway in the film version didn't do that well. You could have cast Angela Lansbury as Mame, but they put in Lucille Ball instead. And you saw Paint Your Wagon.
I mean,
we could get two men who could sing, or we could actually get Lee Marvin and Clint Eastwood.
I would say Clint Eastwood's vocals are comparable to Pierce Brosnan in the new Mamma Mia movies.
Clint's got a longer track record, man. He recorded cowboy crooning songs when he was doing Rawhide because Terry Gross played them to him.
Oh, man.
I was like, he's not in the studio. He's not pulling that stunt in front of her. You know, but he also, you know, Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah.
Has that come up yet on your Amazon Prime?
No, but it may.
It may. So, okay. Yeah, that's a hard trip.
It is.
And it's a lot.
It's like three hours long.
And there's gold, and there's a three-way marriage. And
like, kidnapping prostitutes, and a whole song about it.
Right.
I've never seen anything like it. So, that's special.
There you go. All right. I want to get to, actually, a couple things that's coming up. At IU Cinema, Thursday, January 3rd, is part of the International Art House Series, The Wild Pear Tree at 7 o'clock. Friday, January 4th, Heavy Trip at 7 o'clock, and is also going to be played at 4 o'clock on January 5th, and The Wild Pear Tree at 7 o'clock. And then Monday, January 7th at 7 p.m., The President's Choice, The Emperor and the Assassin. And then Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m., I know, I think this was on Ed Johnsonaut's top list, but it was also one we had talked about the film Border.
Yeah.
Odd little date picture there.
Yeah.
So anyway, that is running over there. I do want to, I kind of plowed through the awards last week, but just a reminder at the IFJA, you know, all of us doughy white guys and drawer sniffers, and we have one female, so hello.
Yeah.
But our best film was, of course, The Hate U Give. Runner-up was Paddington 2.
Yep.
And, yeah, my ballot was different than my list because it happens.
That's how it works.
Other finalists, Black Panther, Eighth Grade, First Reformed, The Rider, Roma, Sorry to Bother You, A Star is Born, and you were never really here.
I'm so proud of that list.
That's a good list.
Yeah.
That is a good list. Best animated feature, Landslide, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, followed by Isle of Dogs.
Yeah.
Best foreign language film, winner was Roma, and runner-up was Cold War. Cold War and Star is Born, don't watch those together.
No.
Don't do that. Best documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor, with a runner-up, Minding the Gap. Best original screenplay, Paul Schrader with First Reformed, and Bo Burnham was the runner-up for Eighth Grade. Best adapted screenplay, Audrey Wells, The Hate U Give, runner-up, Eric Roth, Bradley Cooper, Will Fetters, A Star is Born. Best director, Alfonso Cuarón for Roma. And if you listen carefully, you can hear the camera slowly panning to the right. This is the Shears, the killing of a sacred deer joke. That's always going, but it's a visual one. Anyway, runner-up, Lynn Ramsey, You Were Never Really Here. Best actress, Amandla Stenberg for The Hate U Give. Runner-up, Lady Gaga for A Star is Born. Best supporting actress, Regina King, If Beale Street Could Talk. And runner-up, Olivia Colman, The Favorite. That's also this year's annual argument of what is and is not a supporting or a lead performance. Mm-hmm. This one's a little more realistic than last year's. Sorry, Andy. best actor. Winner was Ethan Hawke for First Reformed. Runner-up, Bradley Cooper, A Star is Born. I'm sorry, it was just silly. Best supporting actor, Sam Elliott, A Star is Born. And I think he's going to get a nomination. He'll get a nomination, one, because it's really good, and two, he hasn't got one yet.
For sure.
So I think we don't deal with locks here, unless they're with bagels, but yeah. Right. Runner-up, Jonah Hill for Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. That's kind of a Gus Van Sant R-rated after-school special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't a fan of it, but I'm not surprised he got on.
Yeah.
He got.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
He was strong in it.
And then we also have this best vocal/motion capture performance. Josh Brolin for Avengers. Mm-hmm. Ben Whishaw for Paddington 2.
I'm okay with the Thanos. That was a remarkable job.
Best ensemble acting, Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Runner-up, Black Klansman. Best musical score. Yes, we are. God, you young whippersnappers.
Yeah.
Tom York for Suspiria, followed by Johnny Greenwood for You Were Never Really Here. Breakout of the Year, Chloe Zhao for The Rider. She was the writer and director. And then Elsie Fisher was the runner-up as the actress in Eighth Grade. Original Vision Award, Sorry to Bother You, followed by Eighth Grade. And then the Hoosier Award, Dead Man's Line, The True Story of Tony Kitteris. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
That was a great year.
That was a really good year.
Yeah.
There's only one title of note on Blu-ray this week. Did you guys see White Boy Rick?
No,
I did not.
I saw it, and it's not bad. It is based on a true story of a teenage kingpin working his way up, and winds up. I think he was the longest person in prison for a nonviolent crime in Michigan's history. Wow. My home state, I'm so proud. set in Detroit in the early 80s, shot in Cleveland. But it's also one of these, it's a unglamorous performance for Matthew McConaughey playing the dad who's a small-time operator, and his son winds up getting more powerful. So you have the crime element. He winds up also becoming, the other part is he's an informant, an undercover informant for the FBI, and still goes to prison.
Hmm.
Wow.
So Jennifer Jason Leigh is in this, Eddie Morrison, Piper Laurie, Bruce Dern, and it's Yann Durange. I hope I'm saying that right, but it was one of these where it's an American crime story done by a non-American. So just enough of a little bit of a different point of view, but no, it's a pretty good picture. So anyway, that is out there. Are we still? How are we on Vice?
I was not a fan.
I probably would have gotten more out of it if The Big Short hadn't been made, but I also think if The Big Short hadn't have been successful, we wouldn't have had Vice.
For sure. I thought it was a weird movie where the approach he took to Big Short, which I loved.
Yep.
Just, I mean, The Big Short was ultimately about, you know, a lot of people involved in these really complex schemes that sort of boiled down to greed. But you could argue that's the case with the Bush 2 administration and Cheney, but so much of the movie's like biopic that it just didn't really work for me. It just was.
It felt like a combination of The Big Short as far as story, because there's little things that, you know, there's a Shakespearean section with Amy Adams and Christian Bale, and Bale's good. He transforms himself. That's what he does. Mm-hmm. Just don't get in his eye line ever. But there's that, and also it's almost like a neutered version of Oliver Stone's Nixon. If you look at, and I think I need to revisit W, because I wish it was as over the top and insane as Nixon, which, you know, treated Nixon like a tragic figure and made you feel sorry for him almost, and that doesn't quite happen with Vice. And then you get and not really a spoiler, but you get stared at and lectured by Christian Bale as Dick Cheney at the end of the film.
Yeah, and not to do too many spoilers, but the second, there are two postscripts that really left a sour taste in my mouth. And the second
the focus group?
Yeah, it makes fun of people for liking Fast and Furious rather than being as smart as Adam McKay. And it's like, Adam McKay, during the Bush 2 administration, what were you doing, making Anchorman? Okay, buddy. Mm.
So anyway, that's still out there. I guess, are you guys, because we've had our meeting, we put up and we just read, of course, the results. How big of the pile of screeners are you still trying to watch? Are you still trying to get through them?
I have three or four more. Three Identical Strangers is one that I really want to watch, but I mostly made it through.
What is based on the stuff we watched after, what has been the best you've seen so far, Evan?
Oh man. Of stuff that came out this year?
Sent to us. And this, again, these are first world problems.
Yeah.
Because eventually when it gets to be down like the last week, you're like, okay, what do I think will make an impact on my ballot? And that's really of what it is for most of the critics out there.
The movie that made the biggest impact on me late in the game was Burning. Korean neo-noir movie. Uh-huh. That's, I mean, it's sort of a one-trick pony where once you've seen the entire movie and you know where it's going, you can't watch it again and have the same investment. But man, that's a creepy movie and just unsettling as this guy tries to figure out what happened to this woman he has a crush on.
Cool.
Yeah.
Joe?
Yeah, that's terrific. I don't want to say it impacted my ballot.
No, but I mean, but there's that stuff of, I should really watch this.
Yeah, Revenge was one for me. I actually saw it earlier in the year, but I was pleasantly surprised to see we got a screener of it.
I'm going to be seeing that next week.
Yeah, it's you have to, there's a rather large leap you have to take in terms of kind of straining credulity a little bit. If you just get by that, it's such a good movie. Mitch Ringenberg on Midwest Film Journal. He wrote in his year-end column that he put it much better than I could about how it subverts the rape revenge genre, and it does things for that genre that no other film has done, and that's, you know, make it credible, make it real, instead of just being another reason to, you know, show brutalization.
Not I spit on your grave.
Yeah,
kind of stuff.
Yeah. And yeah. He specifically said I spit on your grave, but it's such a good movie.
Okay. I cannot wait to hear what you think of Revenge.
Yeah, I really
want
to know.
Here's the thing. This is one of those, I know I can't watch it at work.
Yeah. No.
No,
so
not.
Even me, I try, no. I mean, I actually have common sense if I have to watch a film here. I just finished Ralph Breaks the Internet before this recording,
right.
Which
it works safe.
Yes, there's and now we have Gal Gadot in animation form. Thank you. There's a group of guys like that. Uh-huh. Anyway, but no, but I also have to make sure like my family's gone.
Yeah, Revenge.
Because I don't want to see that or the house that Jack built with my family in the house.
That there you go. That's one.
You do. She wasn't around, was she?
No, I watched House That Jack Built all by myself.
I bet you did.
That was the last movie that became available because it became available on VOD the day of our meeting.
Jeez. And we should have watched that and then had the meeting.
Oh man, we should have, because that was something. It's the first Lars von Trier movie in years that I finished. I was like, yeah, I get you again. Like, and I feel terrible about it, but I get you.
Oh.
Like,
The best of the lot I've seen, and it's really simple, and it's only because it hit in the heart of an old critic guy. But the documentary Hal, about Hal Ashby. Mm-hmm. And this is we should never forget in the 70s, because I think he gets overlooked because that's the era of Coppola and Scorsese and, you know, Brian De Palma and those guys, Spielberg, and that upstart Spielberg. But here is a guy in the 1970s that did Roommates, Harold and Maude, The Last Detail, Shampoo, Bound for Glory, Coming Home, and Being There.
Yeah.
That's an impressive streak. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is old footage, interview footage, clips of the movies, which are fun to revisit. Ben Foster does a lot of voiceover as for Ashby's correspondence over the years. And if anything else, if it'll make people go and rent these films again, then the film does its job. So, but I think I'm a sucker for films and documentaries about filmmaking. You know, I think eventually I'm going to cleanse my palate and revisit Machete Maidens or Not Quite Hollywood or Eurocrime or the Electric Boogaloo, the one about Canon Pictures.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great one.
All right. Got about about 4 minutes left. So I know you watched Paint Your Wagon to cleanse your palate. Joe, have you been able to cleanse your palate with something that wasn't award screener oriented?
I did just take some time. And I've been trying to catch up on things. I did just see Ben is back in the last couple of days. I did watch Avengers Infinity War again. I did watch it the day after Christmas. I was like, you know what? I was sitting there folding laundry, and I'm like, I'm going to watch Infinity War. And I'm going to enjoy it. And I did, damn it.
There's no shame.
No.
Absolutely.
Well, and I did. I think I made the comment somewhere to Evan on, I don't know, Facebook or something. Or at some point, he was talking about how Paddington 2 was his favorite movie of the year. And I said, how dare you put a kid's movie at the top of your list? You know?
Yes. We imitate the internet really well.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
You're dumb. Y-O-U-R.
Yeah.
All cap. So do you guys call each other when you're watching movies like they're sporting events? Dude,
on occasion. On occasion.
Dude.
On occasion, yeah.
Yeah.
I have the thing of film concierge for certain people. I said, look, if you ever have a question, locally, Abdul is one of those.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I've received those calls at like 11 o'clock. Man, I just got out of this. What is up with that?
Yeah.
And it feels like almost, except you can't watch something at the same time, but you're like, dude, we're just at the first Killing of the House of Jack Builds.
Yeah.
Dude, you see it?
Usually, though, it's Nick Rogers typing in all caps to tell us to shut up and not spoil the movie for him.
Yeah.
With the gif of Ogre screaming, nerds.
Yeah. He's really skittish about, like, it's like, oh, did you see that thing in the opening credits? He's like, shut up, you're spoiling the movie for me.
For the opening credits?
Hey.
He doesn't like anything spoiled.
But you know what's funny? We have a thread that we've had for 3 years. Yeah. It started because we were mad about Batman versus Superman.
Uh-huh.
And yet we all showed up for Aquaman together.
We did.
How were you guys on that? I've heard everything from that to people enjoyed it because it knew what it was.
It gave me.
Did it know what it was?
Man, you know I have a huge. I watch Paint Your Wagon. I have a huge tolerance for these movies that are just overproduced and excessive. But Aquaman gave me a migraine that lasted like a whole day.
Yeah.
And Amber Heard looks like she's cosplaying as Ariel.
Oh man, she's like stuck in that costume.
Again, there's a website, we don't go to it.
Right.
If you like animated Gal Gadot. Really? So, and is there enough Dafoe? Is there any chewing of scenery with Willem Dafoe in this?
He does ride a hammerhead shark.
He does. And I gotta say, that's cool.
It's Green Goblin underwater.
I mean, he's pretty great.
Yeah.
All right. He is great.
He's a good guy.
Dolph Lundgren is also amazing on his
Yeah.
Good year for Lundgren, huh?
Yeah.
The rest of the movie is just like ridiculous. And
Or as I think you once said, it's dumb.
It's dumb.
All right. Got a minute. Plug your websites, Joe. Go.
TheFilmYap.com. Go there. More than Midwest Films are all on it. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Oh, no. What's on the Film Yap?
There's a little of this, a little of that. both sides are pretty great. So go to them a lot.
Oh, there's good people on both sides.
I didn't say that. Yeah, you're not going to get that.
All right, Evan.
Yeah, Midwest Film Journal, run by myself, Nick Rogers, Sam Watermeyer, my wife, Allie, and Mitch Ringenberg writes for us. And We just review movies all the time.
Actually, I have to get you and the missus in. It'll be like cinematic newlywed game.
I'll work on it. She takes a little bit to get in and talk, but
yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see.
Boy, once she does, it's awesome.
Her reaction to Aquaman was awesome.
Mm. All right, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Thanks for hanging out, guys.
Yeah.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
No. We'll do it live!